Game Bros. Hello, listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And we have another regularly scheduled bi-weekly episode coming at you hot and heavy, I suppose, this week.
Ready?
Hot and ready, like a Little Caesar's pizza. It's a Stonemaier Games classic. I think it's one of the first games they ever published.
It was their first game, yeah.
It was their first game. Well, there you go. And surprisingly, we haven't talked about it yet, even though it is one of our mom's most favorite games. Yeah. Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
We are, of course, talking about Viticulture, designed by Jamie Stegmaier and Alan Stone, and published in 2013 by, as we said, Stonemaier Games.
All right.
It was the first game they published.
Nice.
It was named the best Kickstarter in 2013 from St. Louis by one of the St. Louis newspapers. So there we go.
All right. Very cool. All right. So for a short description on Viticulture, in Viticulture, players run a winery from vine to bottle and earn points by fulfilling orders. Players take turns placing their workers on the board in order to draw and plant vine cards, draw and play visitor cards, gain money, build structures in their vineyards, buy more workers, harvest grapes, bottle wine, and complete orders. Certain actions, namely filling orders, earn you victory points. At the end of the round, when the first player reaches 20 points, the player with the most points wins. So it's a worker placement game. The goal is to get to at least 20 points. But everyone gets to place all of their workers on that round when somebody reaches 20 points. So whoever has the most points at the end of that round wins. Right. So that's a short description. Now we're going to get into the gritty detail of the game, how to play it, and how to win at it. And then later on in the episode, we'll talk about the design. So, Viticulture. You run a winery, you place workers, you earn points. At the start of the game, you start with a big worker and two small workers. A big worker and a number of small workers, usually two. I think there may be some like starting in this game. It's not really a faction. It's a like a mom and pop that determine your starting resources. But it's usually a big worker, two small workers, an amount of money, and a trade off between money or a structure or some kind of like bonus action, I think, on the first turn, something like that.
Right.
So then, before you actually get to placing the workers, you every round go through this process of determining the turn order. The board has a turn order tracker on the bottom left corner, and depending on where you place yourself in the turn order, you'll get a bonus resource for that turn. So just to go through what the turn order looks like. And it starts with, you know, one player and then it goes counterclockwise. Does it go counterclockwise?
Clockwise.
It starts at one player.
Wait, hold on. Okay. The order that you choose turn order goes counterclockwise. Yes.
Okay.
It's, yeah, first selection for wake up time, as it's called in the game. It's like a little rooster meeple that's mm-hmm. used to signify. Right.
Okay. So the person who gets to go first in the whole worker placement phase of the game, they don't get a bonus because they're going first. The person who goes second can get a, there's actually seven spots. That it doesn't necessarily mean, that there's seven players and they're going in that order. So that means if someone chooses to go first and nobody chooses to go second and someone chooses to go third, then it'll go like the first person, then the next person and so on. So I'll just describe the seven spots that you can put your player turn order option. So the second spot you get to you get a vine card at the start of that round. The third spot you get a order card at the start of the round. The fourth spot you just get a single unit of money. The fifth spot you get to choose between getting either a fall or a winter visitor card. The sixth spot, you just get 1 point straight up, one victory point. And the seventh spot, you get access to a temporary worker for that round.
Right.
So players choose the bonus that they want to get. A bonus can only be chosen once by a player. So if somebody takes the third spot, which gives you the order card, the next player cannot also choose that spot. They have to choose a different one. And this will determine the turn order wherever players put their turn order markers, their little roosters. So then after that, the worker placement phase of the game actually begins, and it's divided into two halves, and you can choose where you want to place your workers over the course of a round. You don't have to place, you know, a certain number in the first half of the board and then a certain number in the second half of the board. They're divided actually into seasons. But you only get access to your workers for the whole year, not for like each individual season. So, oftentimes you'll want to save workers. You'll not want to place them all in the first part of the round, so that you can play them in the second part of the round. So let's
right, yeah,
describe that a little better.
So after you choose who's going in which turn order, starting with that highest player on that tracker and descending downward, you take turns choosing whether or not you want to play workers in the summer half of the board.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry, you can
bring summer, fall, yeah. Winter. Yes, okay. Yeah,
and then you can also choose to pass during this time, where you choose not to take any other actions.
So if you do place a worker, there are six places for you to put your worker. Each worker has a number of slots, and this is where the difference between little workers and big workers comes into play. The little workers have to go into a slot, and if the slots get filled up, then that means that no more workers can take that action for that season, or for that round, as a matter of fact. However, a big worker can use any of these worker placement actions without taking up a slot if all the slots are full. If the slots aren't full, you can use a big worker to fill one of those slots. Okay, so the six actions that you can take in summer are you can play a summer visitor card, you can draw a vine card, you can sell at least one grape or buy/sell one field. Each player starts the game with three vine fields that they can plant grapes in, so you can sell those off for money. And you can also sell the grapes that you've harvested for money there. You can plant a vine, which is when you play a vine card into one of your fields. You can give a tour to gain money, or you can spend money to build a structure in your vineyard. Right. And we'll get into detail about like what the field looks like and what your vineyard, your own personal vineyard looks like later on. But let's continue with this board and how a round plays out.
Right. So after everybody has decided whether or not they want to play workers in summer or past, it then proceeds to fall, where everybody gets their choice of either one summer visitor card or one winter visitor card. These have like bonus actions on them that tend to mess around with, you know, resource costs, or it might give you some points for a cost.
The way that I can summarize visitor cards is they sort of do what the other spaces in that season do, but they'll give you some sort of flexibility and some options or some bonuses.
Right.
Like you said, bonus points. Like it might say like you can build a structure, and if you build a structure that's big enough, you'll get a bonus point.
Right.
So, and that would be on a summer visitor card, because the build a structure action is in summer. There's also winter visitor cards that will do things and play around with the different kinds of actions that you normally take in winter.
Right. Speaking of which, after everybody's chosen whether or not they want a summer or winter visitor card, it then moves to winter, where players can play their remaining workers in the winter action spots. And the same limitation of workers in worker slots or grande worker in any slot.
And this also uses the turn order that was determined at the beginning of the round. So after everyone passes in summer and you go through the card drawing portion of the round, when it gets to winter, you start back at the top of the turn order. That's the person who takes the first turn. So the winter actions are to draw order cards, which are purple, play winter visitor cards, harvest one field, which is to add up the different kinds of grapes that you have grown in the field and put them in your barrels. Then you can also make up to two wine tokens, which is when you take the wine that you have in your barrels and you convert it into wine in your storehouses. You can, so that's an action. Another action is to pay gold to train a worker. So that's how you get more workers. And then the final action is to fill an order. So that's when you play a purple card, which you have met the order for, met the requirements for in your storehouses, and that's how you earn points in the game. There's one general space on the board that can be taken during either summer or winter, and that's just to gain one gold. That's just a little cart in the center of the board.
Yep.
All right. So that's the board. There's a couple more. There's one thing to point out on the board. There's a little tracker in the bottom right corner for a residual. So every time you fill out an order, you increase your residual. You start at zero, so your first order puts it by one, and your residual is just a bonus income that you get at the start of every round.
Right. Bonus All right, money.
So let's talk about the player cards, the placards.
Okay, the player tableaus.
Sure.
So on these boards, you have your vine fields at the top, and then at the bottom will be your grapes in your cellars. And those are like the main areas, and then there's spots for structures, and then how much each structure costs along the board as well. So the vine fields, there are three, and each one has a different maximum number of grapes it can hold. One of them can hold 5, then 6, and then 7. And that's also how much money you get for selling each of those fields.
Mm-hmm.
So if you sell the one that holds 5 grapes, you get 5 coins.
And just to describe like what a vine card looks like, it'll have either a red symbol, a white symbol, or both a red and a white symbol. And each symbol will have a number in it. And that's like the value of the grape that that vine produces. So, for example, there could be a vine that produces a red one and a white one. There could be another vine that produces a red 3. And so, like you said, the value of the grapes, or the value of the field is how much grapes it can hold. That's like the maximum value the grapes can hold. So if you were to put a red one, white one vine, and a red 3 vine into the 5 field, then that would be at maximum capacity. You couldn't plant any more vines in there.
Right. Now, so that's when you take the plant a vine action, you put the vine card on one of these fields. Mm-hmm. And normally you can't move a vine off the field.
Right. Once you've planted a vine, it's pretty much there to stay, except for if you unlock the plow.
The yoke.
Structure. The yoke, yes. The yoke structure on your player card.
Right. So when you harvest grapes, you add up all of the, or you take the number of grapes in a field,
a single
on the
field.
Cards, yeah,
mm-hmm.
And then you take those and put tokens in your barrels in the bottom left over the numbers that those grapes were.
Right. So you have two trackers in the bottom left that go from 1 to 9. There's one for red grapes and one for white grapes. So in the example I gave, if you had a red one, white one, and a red 3 in that field and you harvested it, then you would have a red 4 because that's 3+1 and you'd have a white 1. So you'd put a token on red 4 and a token on white 1 to show that you've harvested those grapes.
Right. At the end of every year, so every round, after, you know, everybody's taken their winter turns, grapes will age, meaning you move them up a number. So mm-hmm. at the end of that round where you had harvested those, so you had gotten the red 4 and the white 1, it would age into a white 2 and a red 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then depending on how old they are is how much money you get when you sell the grapes. So if it's 1 through 3, you'll get 1 coin for each grape you sell. 4 through 6 is 2 coins. 7 through 9 is 3 coins.
Right. It's important to note that sometimes you will harvest more than one field at a time. So when that happens, and sometimes you'll get the same number. So for example, if you were to get a red 4 from field A and then a red 4 from field B, you can't have 2 tokens on the 4 slot in this bottom left grape tracker. So you would get a red 4, and then because the red 4 is taken, the second red 4 becomes a red 3.
Right. It fills up the next.
It's important to know that.
Lowest.
Yeah. It's important to note that each grape number can only have 1 token on it. And so you fill out the next lowest whenever you come into a conflict.
Right.
All right. So now your bottom right is your cellars.
Right. When you turn grapes into wine, you pretty much move the grape tokens over to the wine cellar. Now, this is for if you want to make red wine or white wine. once you have upgraded your cellar so it can hold higher numbers and hold more wine, you can make blushes and sparkling wines. Normally, your cellar can hold, I believe, wine size 1 through 4.
It starts out only being able to hold 1 through 3 in either color of wine. And then when you upgrade to a medium cellar, which is a structure that costs 4 gold to upgrade to, then you can hold either color of wine up to 6 now, up to a value of 6. Mm-hmm. And you can also hold blushes up to a value of 6. And then when you upgrade to your large cellar, which is a structure that costs 6 gold, you can hold either wine and blushes up to a value of 9, as well as you can hold sparkling wine up to a value of 9.
Right.
To make actually, it's important to note, I guess, that blushes start at 4, and then sparkling wine starts at 7.
Right. And wine, similar to grapes, will age every round. So if you mm-hmm. turn a 3 red into wine, then it will become a 4 red at the end of that round.
Mm-hmm. But that's only if you have the cellar unlocked for it. At the start of the game, if you have a 3 red and it would age to a 4 red, it doesn't. It just remains a 3 red until you have that cellar space.
Right. So to make the blushes, I believe you understood this better than I did.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. At the moment when you convert your grapes into wine, you can either choose to just convert them straight up to the color of wine that the grape is. But if you want to make a blush, then you need to take a red grape and a white grape and add them together, and that will make the blush. So if you want to make a blush 5, then you just have to add, for example, like a red 2 and a white 3, or a white 2 and a red 3. You know, as long as it adds up to 5, that's how you get a blush. And you get that, you make that decision when you take the create wine action.
Right.
On the board. Same thing for sparkling wines, but sparkling wines take 1 white grape and 2 red grapes. So you take the sum of those 3 grapes.
Either way.
No, it's 1 white, 2 red. And you take the sum of those 3, and you have to get at least 7 in order to store sparkling wine, but it goes up to 9.
Right.
And all of these wines age, like you said, at the end of a round, as long as you have the space. If you don't, then they age until, you know, there's no more space. And just like in the barrels, when you put wine in your cellar and there's already a token on the space that you're trying to create the wine for. So, for example, if you already have a red 4 wine and you make another red 4 wine, it gets knocked down to red 3 because you can only have 1 token on each tracker, on each space on the tracker.
Right.
Okay.
There are a few more structures you can buy on your board when you take the build a structure action.
The most important are the trellis and the irrigation, which will serve as prerequisites for certain vines that you try to plant in your fields.
Right. Typically, the vines that have both types of grapes on them require a trellis, and the vines that have a number of 3 on it require the irrigation.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the yoke, which we mentioned, is the only way to remove or to uproot a vine, which means to put it back into your hand. Or at least the only way, using a worker that isn't mm-hmm. like a visitor card. There is the showroom or the tasting room, which mm-hmm. Is whenever you do a wine, whenever you do a tour on the summer board or the summer half of the board, if mm-hmm. you have wine in your cellar, you get 1 point. There is the windmill, which gives you a victory point whenever you plant a vine. And then there is the cottage, which gives you either a winter or summer visitor every fall. So you mm-hmm. get another choice, basically.
Right. Fall is when you choose to draw one of those 2 cards. So this is just giving you a bonus card. Right. And it's important to note that for the windmill and for the tasting room, you can only get 1 point from either of those structures per year or per round in game terms. So, So there's a limit to the points you can get there.
Right. So even if you were able to plant multiple grapes in one round or multiple vines, you could only get 1 point from the windmill.
Mm-hmm. Just to describe what the order cards look like, they're just purple cards. They'll have a number of wine symbols on them with different values. Sometimes they're just asking for like a single red wine, maybe like a red 2 or a red 3. That's probably a card that's only worth 1 point. Sometimes they'll ask for a red and a white. Sometimes they'll ask for a red and a blush. Those will be worth more points, 2 points, 3 points. I think the most a card can give you is like up to 6 points. And those are cards that'll require like a sparkling wine plus something else, most likely.
Yeah, they take the most grapes.
And then all order cards have a symbol that represents that you get a point of residual. Some of the more difficult to fill orders give you 2 residual. Right. And again, a residual is just a point or a coin that you get at the start of every round. There's one last important detail that we need to talk about, and that is that when you're playing in a 3 to 6 player game, then on the worker placement board, the depending on how many players you're using, it determines how many of those like small worker slots each action has. So in a 3 to 4 player game, you have 2 slots per action. In a 5 to 6 player game, you have all 3 slots per action. And the second slot in each action gives you a small bonus. Small to large bonus, depending on the action. But the gist of it is that each bonus is essentially like doing the action a second time.
Right. So if you take the second space on the plant a vine action, you plant 2 vines.
Mm-hmm. With one the worker. Only exceptions to how that works is that the give a tour, instead of giving you double the gold, it only gives you 1 extra gold. And then the build one structure doesn't allow you to build 2 structures. Instead, it just gives you 2 gold. Same thing with paying to train workers. It gives you gold before you train workers. It gives you 1 gold.
The sell grape or fields action gives you a point.
Mm-hmm. I suppose also the fill an order card doesn't let you fill 2 orders. It just gives you a bonus point for the order you filled. So those are, and it's also important to note that you don't have to take them in order. You can immediately take that second space, being the first person to use an action.
Right.
That's a common misconception about this game. Okay. Yeah. So I think that's pretty much everything you need to know about playing Viticulture. So now I suppose we should talk about the strategy in Viticulture.
Right. So I want to mention something, which is that making wine and filling the wine order are obviously both in winter, which means that you don't have to make wine early. And even if, you're worried about running out of space in your barrels, you don't have to worry about that too much, just because, like, if you harvest a field once in a round, you get a grape of that number. But then at the end of the round, it ages, and the next round you can harvest that number again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not super important to make wine until you know that you need it, or until you have like a showroom if you want to get the points.
Right.
Otherwise, there's not much of a point to making the wine.
Even if you need a very high value wine, like, I mean, the only times where you need to maybe think about making the wine early is if you're trying to make a high value blush or sparkling wine, and it's better for you to combine them now and let them age in your stores than to let them sit in your barrels. Maybe. In general, you don't really have to worry about that, just because the barrel grapes age at the same rate as the wine. And as long as you have, you know, the store for it, you can just wait. You don't have to upgrade your barrels. You can start with the grape level 1, and it can go all the way up to level 9, and then you can convert it when you're ready. And you essentially haven't really wasted any investment on that grape.
Exactly.
You probably actually saved on investment rather than like trying to get very high value vines by meeting prerequisites and then harvesting those and immediately converting them and selling them. You do have to worry about that later in the game if you're trying to sell like multiple high value orders in the same turn or turns. But yeah, at the start of the game, you can take like just a simple like value 1 vine, and you know, by the time you actually need to fill orders, it's probably already aged to the point where, you know, if you had like tried to increase your production speed, you know, midway through the game.
Right. So what Jeffrey is saying is that it's good to harvest vines early, but then you don't want to convert them to wine until you have an order ready.
Sure. Yeah. Because converting them to wine without having an order is just a wasted turn.
Right. And so, obviously, this being a worker placement game, having more workers is pretty important. So, you know, obviously saving and not using a worker to make wine early means you can use that worker somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, you should just try and get a worker pretty early. You know, it's a worker placement game. There's I think 4 bonus workers if you start with two, so there's six total small workers. Don't quote me on that, but it means that you definitely want to try and get a worker in the first two rounds, and then maybe again in the next two rounds after that.
Yeah, I'd say you want to be getting workers about every two rounds if you can. It could be highly contested, and you may be like offset there, but just angle for that. Right. And then also you want to try to harvest at least one vine in the first round, two rounds of the game.
Right. Those are your early goals.
Yeah, those are your early goals. And that means like by the time you need to make orders, you've got the grapes you need for it. At the start of the game, you don't actually start with order cards. You need to draw them. So eventually you need to start.
Dependent on who your starters are.
Sure. So
the start of the game,
some players might start with.
Yeah, you can start with orders, grapes, or visitors, depending on the mama and papa.
Right. So eventually you need to get those. And I'd say, you know, when you are starting to formulate plans on how you're going to win the game, you can't really do that until you have order cards in your hand. So take those two actions we had, in mind, getting workers and planting vines. But when you've, you know, accomplished either of those, get some order cards and then let those be the things that drive you towards the end game.
Right. Don't be afraid of selling a field. I think it's perfectly safe to sell one field at least.
Mm-hmm.
The thing you have to worry about is you can only harvest a field once in a round, as in each field can only be harvested once every round.
Right, so you can't harvest your five field twice.
Right. So this means that if you want to get more than two grapes in a round, you do need at least two fields. And I think for the most part, having two fields is fine for that because, there's some wine orders that require three grapes of the same color, but if you've been stockpiling your grapes early, that shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. It's not hard to like, just, yeah, get a couple of those harvest a field actions in a little early.
Right.
Sometimes you might have like a good visitor card that will allow you to, construct your yoke at an opportune moment. So you could also just kind of rely on that too, in case that harvest a field action space gets taken up a lot by other players.
While sellers are necessary to fill wine orders, I think the yoke is like the second most important one because it gives you an extra harvest action without having to contest the harvest one on the board, which means you can save your grande worker for elsewhere.
Sure.
And it's also like the cheapest structure. It's just two gold.
Oftentimes, the things that will help you build structures will reduce the cost by two gold, so you're pretty much always getting that one for free.
Right.
In that case, then the amount of money that you need to be focused on is it costs two gold to build the trellis, three gold to build
the irrigation,
and then four gold to create a worker. If you're able to get that second space on the worker, build a worker action, then it only costs three gold technically because it gives you one gold back. So because of that, you really only have to either sell your five cost field or your six cost field to afford important things. Your five cost field can afford you, for example, the trellis and the bonus worker if you manage to get there first. The six cost field can afford you both of those at full price. The six cost field could also afford you the irrigation and the bonus worker if you manage to get there first.
Right.
I'd say it's a good thing to save your seven field though, because if you can really only manage to harvest one field a turn because you're just kind of pressed for actions, your workers need to be doing a couple other things, and you don't really have the time, you want to at least make sure you're getting like good grapes out of your fields.
Right. The seven field makes it really easy to push for those blushes, which are pretty good. I think it's a good idea to fill one wine order kind of early-ish. Not super early, but once you have your second bonus worker, maybe like think about filling one wine order so that you get that residual coming through.
Mm-hmm. I'd say, yeah, it's good to fill an early wine order for that residual. Because that residual will help fund new workers on later turns, when other people might be who didn't get the residuals sooner might be a little strapped for money. Or it'll prevent you from having to place a worker in a place that gives you money on a later turn. So it helps like fix your turns later in the game. Now, you can only really fill early orders easily if you get the orders that are just for like small red and white batches. So I guess focus on that if you manage to get one of those from like an early draw.
Yeah.
I'd say it might be worth it to like spend one worker to get like the double order draw action space.
Right.
Just to push for an early order if you don't have one yet.
Right. Likewise.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, likewise, I think the safest way to end the game is to fill multiple wine orders in one turn.
Mm-hmm.
So the easiest way to do this is when you are the first person to pick turn order, to just pick first turn. And then on when it comes to winter, you can play a regular worker in the wine order action and then use your grande worker again. And then you'll be mm-hmm. the only person, well, not the only person, but you'll be able to safely fill two wine orders that way, assuming you have the wine and grapes to complete the order.
Mm-hmm. And you'll get the bonus point from that second space if you're playing with in a 3-6 player game.
Right. And the reason I say this is just because, like, obviously, if you are the one ending the game, then you probably are ahead. But just to be safe, you don't want people to be too close to you on that turn. So filling two orders will give you, like, I don't know, 10 points on average, maybe. Maybe 8 points. But that still is hard for other players to keep up with and then beat in that same round.
Right. And working backwards from there, you should be setting yourself up for that two order turn when you reach about 10 or 15 points.
Right.
So when you're little score tracker thing first enters that 10 to 15 point area on the scoreboard, that's when you should start drawing order cards so you have the perfect two that you can get set up very easily and very quickly, and then, you know, take first player, go to that space, and then play those two and finish the game, and then hopefully just from the two you'll get from that 10 to 15 range to the 20 to 25 range.
Right.
So on that note, I also want to just point out at the start of the game, the best places to be on that player turn tracker, in my opinion, at the start of the game is getting order cards. If you have none that you can score on, even like a high value order card that you can't score early in the game is going to be valuable for like that two order turn later in the game. If anything. So the order spot, which is spot number 3, which is also generally pretty high up on the turn order. And then the final spot, spot number 7, where you get the temporary worker, is extremely valuable at the start of the game when you only have your base workers, your start workers.
Right. Also, obviously, if you don't have any grapes to start with, take the draw grape turn mm-hmm. order space.
Sure. Yeah.
If you have number 2, I think.
It's number 2 is to draw a vine. If you're totally lacking in something, then yeah, you can go for that. The money one is a little iffy. The point one, I could see maybe taking the point one if you feel like the end of the game is coming and you can't get that first player turn. By the way, towards the end of the game, when you're pushing for victory, first player is everything.
Right.
There's one other point in the mid game where I think first player is super valuable, and that's when you're setting up to play two visitor cards in either season.
Right.
So we mentioned how the visitor cards work. You get a free visitor card every turn with no action spent. Everyone gets it. The visitor cards are generally, from what I've seen, looking at the visitor cards, they're about as valuable as any other space in that season. Maybe just like a tiny extra value, like they might be about worth as much as taking the second spot on that action. Or they might just give you some sort of like versatility. So they could be like two different spaces and you get to choose between them.
Right.
So because of that, playing a card is kind of like playing your worker somewhere else in that month. Playing two cards is like getting the value of two workers out of one, which is a lot of value.
This is specifically in the 3-6 player version.
Yes.
Those are the ones that have spaces that let you play two visitor cards of one type.
Absolutely. So if you're playing in with the second space unlocked, this is like a huge amount of value in the game that I don't think anything else in the game. I mean, getting the second space on any given space is like doing it twice. So you are getting that value from the other spaces. But having that value plus the versatility, I think is it. I mean, it's kind of like you played on the second space on two different spaces. It's just a ton of value. So setting yourself up somewhere in the mid game for like super valuable turns where you play your worker on that double play a card spot, I think is important to like sort of solidifying your lead.
Yeah.
Or catching up to the person who's in the lead.
I think it's a big tempo swing.
Honestly, I think when we played last, the person who won was the person who took the most of these turns, the most turns, or who got the most value out of playing two cards with one worker.
No, the person who won was the one that filled two orders in the final turn, which was their turn to pick turn order.
I mean, but they did both things. I think they played the most cards throughout the course of the game. Potentially, I think they're maybe tied for most. You played a lot of cards too, but and I think I think they also played a lot of cards. They did the double order, but either the value way that you get from playing two cards, I think, is tremendous, and it's important to kind of angle for that. If you're angling for that, you should be certain that that action is also helping you fulfill orders and get points. Yeah, you don't want it to be wasted, but when it helps you, it's a ton of value. So right, something to keep in mind.
Okay. I think I don't have any more important strategic info. Strategery.
Mm-hmm. I think I also don't have any strategic points of info. All right. So before we get into the design of the game, let's just throw out some quick plugs. You can follow us on social media at BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter. Hit us up with suggestions for games we should check out there. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, to find all our episodes cataloged. So we'll have each episode tagged with the game we discuss in it. If you don't see the game that you want to hear our thoughts about, again, hit us up with a suggestion. You can find our TeePublic store on our website at teepublic.com/user/bgbcast, or click the link on our homepage where you can get merch with our cool logo on it. That does it for BG Bros plugs. So let's talk about the Patreon.
Oh yeah. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/user/BGBcast. And, on the Patreon, you can, support us for at minimum $1 a month. But if you support us for $5 a month, you get, access to bonus episodes of, Board Game Bros, The Dusty Shelf, where every month I review an old game and kind of look at what makes it tick, what makes it classic, or what might have made it lost to history. I also do Board Game Bros Let's Make a Game, where I design a game over the course of the podcast, going over design decisions, prototyping, doing screenshots of like the prototypes, and kind of giving behind the scenes information into the game design process. Currently, those have been on hiatus for a moment, but they will return. I'm going to go ahead and say they'll return in June for sure.
All right.
And then I just want to say that I stream on twitch.tv/twack, twitch.tv/twak. I stream on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 1 p.m. Central Time to like 4 p.m. Central Time. I do speedruns. I do fighting games. I do competitive games. I do roguelites. A lot of cool stuff. A lot of interesting discussion.
All right, and I also stream at twitch.tv/radicalhawks. That's Radical, H-A-W-K-Z, and that's where I've been playing a lot of Teamfight Tactics, but I've also recently been going through the Soulsborne games, so check me out there on Wednesdays, potentially on weekends, and follow me on Twitter at Jeff Craig Design.
Yeah.
All right, so now, let's talk about the design. Speaking of design, let's talk about the design of this game.
Yeah. Okay.
So first of all, this is something that we haven't really talked about in a while, but it's something, it's sort of like the game using its mechanics to tell you what to care about. So we placed a big emphasis on planning ahead in this game, like getting the orders, and planning your strategy around fulfilling them, especially fulfilling two in a single turn to end the game. That takes a lot of planning ahead. And this game has this mechanic in it called aging, which totally like makes you plan ahead for the future.
Right. It is.
I mean, yeah, it's because you can make a small investment and then you can see that it's growing and then you can use that to determine how many turns it'll take for it to grow into what you need.
Right. It's definitely
also it's a worker placement game.
Right. It's definitely like the grapes look small on the cards because, you know, it's a lot of ones and twos. And so you might think like there's no way I can harvest these and make them decent wine and then sell them in the same turn. Mm-hmm. So it and also like as soon as you harvest a grape, you see that it's aging and you really get a hold of like, wait a minute, this just went from a 3 grape to a 4 grape and I don't even have a cellar built for a 4 wine. And mm-hmm. in another turn, that could be a 5 grape, which is huge. Like it right. makes it known how that investment works super early.
Not to mention, you only start out with 3 workers. And so, you know, even if you plan like I want to make a worker and I want to plant and harvest a vine, like you might find yourself like, oh, I can't even do that in the first turn because I only have 3 workers and all the spaces might be getting taken up. So that kind of already says like things take multiple turns, multiple rounds for you to actually, you know, perform important actions in this game.
Right. And it also gets you into the spirit of planning ahead by having these 2 seasons where mm-hmm. you can only do summer actions in summer. And once it becomes winter, you can only do winter actions.
Right.
Because like it means that if you say I want a worker because this is a worker placement game and I want more workers, wait, I have to save a worker from summer. So like it immediately in like turn one, it shows you that you have to plan ahead to do some things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You're planning ahead even within a turn. You have to plan ahead, not just multiple turns ahead. A single turn involves planning ahead in this game.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's super super good that it like gets you into that mindset. I think it is kind of awkward how if you don't see that like summer visitor cards are good, it might not often seem valuable to take one. Since when I first played this game, I was like, oh wait, if I get a summer card, I won't be able to play it, but if I get a winter card, I might be able to use it next during fall. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So obviously the variable starts with who has what cards kind of helps keep it interesting and helps separate the openers a bit. So I understand why not everybody starts with like a visitor card. I feel like a lot of games try to give you access to good things like early so that you know that you can take them later and they'll be worthwhile. But I think most of this game does that because all the cards you get early on are still pretty useful in mm-hmm. different ways. I really like the Grande Worker mechanic. I think it helps make this game a bit more approachable than other worker placement games.
I think this game, the whole like way that the worker placement board is set up and this Grande Worker mechanic, like both of those things make this for like a very easy to glom worker placement game with like tons of like allowances and tons of like it really lacks the punishment that some worker placement games
exactly
have.
Yeah, even though you do have to plan ahead, you do get this one like safety worker that you can hold on to and keep it from like you're not too punished by not taking this thing first thing, you know. Like in Agricola, mm-hmm. if you don't take the wood when you need to, then you'll be punished heavily for it. But in this, it's okay. You always have the backup worker. And having mm-hmm. one worker like this means that it's still, like turn order is still important and being first to the actions you want is still important, especially when there's more than 2 players.
Mm-hmm.
But it's less bad because the important part of the action, which is like the main action, is always doable once.
Right. Even without that, each action still has multiple spaces. So there's still like less of a punishment for not taking an action. It's not entirely first come, you know, only served. It's first come, best served, second come, you still get the action. And then third time, you got to use the big guy. But right. Yeah, there it gives you plenty of time to do the thing that you need to do. Like maybe if you didn't even realize you needed to do it. Or it just gives you plenty of time in a turn to do everything you set out to do.
Right.
From, you know, the highest priority things to the lesser priority things.
It's also a pretty clean way to make it so everybody can fill a wine order at least once every round. Because, like, if you said, like, you want everybody to be able to fill in one wine order, regardless of how many people have already gone there, you could make, like, an extra spot on the board, you could make more slots, or make it not require slots, but then you have to make sure that you have something that says, like, how many people can be here, because otherwise people could fill four wine orders in one turn super easily. So this makes the wine order spot still competitive while also meaning you can't get shut out of points on, like, that last round.
Because,
like, imagine if you were 2 points behind first place, but they ended the round by filling up the last spot and you couldn't do anything there. Like, that would feel kind of devastating, right? So having this Grande Worker helps kind of soothe that moment, that feeling.
I think another interesting thing about the second space bonus that all of the worker placement spaces have is, like, not only does it add a greater emphasis on first come, first serve, maybe, it, like, without taking away the punishment that comes from missing the opportunities, you know, it adds emphasis to that aspect of worker placement. That's still there. But also it adds this second option where players can take these spaces without being able to actually utilize them, just so that other people don't get them.
Right.
So, for example, if you see someone hoarding a lot of winter visitor cards and you only have one winter visitor card, you can still just take that play two card space and only play one card, just because you're taking away that option from somebody else.
Yeah, it's this extra part of, like, counter picking or counter moving.
But like we said, because there's multiple spaces, because you have the big worker, that doesn't completely shut down someone's strategy for the rest of the turn. They can still do some of what they were planning on doing. They're just sort of missing out on, like, extra value. The only times I think when that really can affect someone's strategy is when they were hoping to get that bonus gold from, like, build a structure or hire a worker in order to actually afford that space. But I guess in this game, like, that's the least of your worry. Like, you shouldn't plan for that outcome. I think it's pretty obvious from the start that you shouldn't plan for getting that space. I mean, you can, as long as you got the first player. So it's not a problem if you did. But yeah, you shouldn't rely on that being sort of midway to the end of the turn order.
Right. So there's something that is kind of confusing to me, which is the way the winemaking system is set up.
Okay.
So, like, I understand that, like, having blushes and sparkling is at least flavorful, but it's hard for me to really connect why it exists otherwise. So think of it like this. When you are making a blush, I guess you have some freedom with which grapes you choose, but say if a blush is, like, a six, what's the difference between that and, like, a wine order that just requires four red and two white beyond the freedom? I guess the freedom helps.
So the reason why it's more difficult, or it's more important,
building a cellar, but
It's not about that requirement, because if it still required, like, a four and a two, you'd still need the cellar. But the difference is that you do that when you convert the grapes into wine. So it's easier to, like, just let a grape build up speed and then convert it, you know, when you need to, versus, like, converting them and making that choice. You know what I mean? Or you could even convert a grape to wine and just let it age in your cellars. It's like you're having to make more decisions at a very critical point. If they were worth the same, then you can just kind of autopilot convert all your grapes into the wine of the normal color. And then they'll eventually get you points.
Right. But, like, I guess the thing is that the math doesn't really change between, like, turning it into wine and then letting it age versus just letting the grapes age. And, I mean, I guess you don't want to make it wine early regardless. It's still better often to keep it in the barrels until you need it. Right?
I think it's just more just, like, I mean, you can convert it into wine, you know, early on, But it's going to remain red or white wine. So like if you need a blush early, I don't know. I mean,
I don't know.
I don't know either. Maybe there's something more to it, but I think just like it makes you think a little harder about how you convert your grapes into wine.
Sure. And I guess also, I appreciate also, that it gives you freedom of like how you combine the numbers.
Also, I mean, when you convert grapes into wine, it's not just like a free for all convert them however you want. You can only convert them into two different wines. So there's that as well. Like if there's four different kinds of wine, then it's not like, oh, it converts to wine. Okay, I'll make a red and a white. Two wine, make a red and white. There it's like that. Two wine. Do I make a red? Do I make a white? Do I make a blush? Do I make a sparkling?
Okay. I guess that makes sense then. Though I do still think one thing that is annoying in a way is how you can combine two grapes of the same color to make sparkling, but everywhere else you can't do that.
It's a white and two red.
Right, but that's still the only place. Combination. Right, but like you can't combine two red otherwise, and you can't combine any grapes otherwise. I think I might have just been getting hung up on that personally, but it didn't help that like I looked down and be like, oh, you can combine two red and a white here. So, you know, like it's sort of a weird hook that you have to remember. It might be better if.
I'd be curious to see if that's an assumption that the average player makes. Similar to like the average player might think that you have to take the first spot of a space before you can take the second spot that gives you the bonus. They might not know you can go straight to the second. Does an average player assume that like because you combine grapes to make blends, you know, in an additive way, why can you just combine grapes of the same color to make that, you know, color grape in an additive way?
I guess I don't want to make like judgments on it based on my own hangups. If it's about like confusion or unclear things, I can understand why they did the space, for example, because with two players, it's just the leftmost space. With three to four, it's the middle one. And so you're adding it from left to right. So like that makes sense, even though it had a confusing outcome. I don't know. It could just be me. So, but one thing that is very cool that I like about this is that this game has incredible board flow. So listen to our Euphoria episode. Cause when I was sitting here or when I was thinking about this game and like playing it, I was like, this came before Euphoria, right? Because this board is so smooth. It goes from left to right in terms of actions. So obviously, like, you know, the summer is on the left. The turn order is on the left. Then the summer is next. Then the cards are at the top. The winter is on the right. But, like, actions are kind of placed near where you would think they would be. So the play a card spaces are up near the other cards. If you're looking at the board upright, like, you know, looking at it so the art is upright, then the worker space and the build a structure space are at the bottom, which is where your tableau is. And then also it goes from left to right in terms of the get a vine card to fulfill a wine order process. So from left to right, it's get a vine, plant a vine, harvest, make wine, fulfill a wine order. Like that all is from left to right as well.
Also, the give a tour to get money space is to the left of the spend money to build structure space.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So like it's super well organized in this regard.
Also, the whole board is like a giant illustration, like a top aerial view of a vineyard, of a large like winemaking operation. So it looks, you know, it's not like they have these things like sectioned off into just like squares with just like one-off illustrations. It's one like seamless, one long illustration that has all of these elements to it.
Right.
It didn't have like the seasons you can see change. It gets a little snowy on the right side of the illustration.
Right.
But that doesn't confuse anything. Like it still makes perfect sense. You know, these things, especially like the give a tour has people coming in through the entrance because it's on the very edge of the board and that's the entrance to the vineyard and that's where the tour would start. And building a building is on the outskirts of the board. You know, it's on the far left because obviously they started at the center when they started this vineyard, and now they're expanding.
Right. And what's also cool is, so the divider between seasons is just like a kind of dotted line. But I think this helps you remember that, like, at least for me, at least, it helps me remember that when I'm in summer, I should think about both seasons at the same time.
So there's no line.
Is there?
On the board. Nope.
Oh.
There's a crease where the board
fold. Oh, sure. There's the fold, which is in the middle.
which, you know, there's just barely one part of one winter action over the crease.
Right.
But still, like, yeah, the crease is generally in the middle, and you can essentially visually cut everything in half.
Right. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, even if, like, if there was, like, a distinct divider between seasons, mm-hmm. I could imagine, like, forgetting to look at the other side, or, like, keeping them too separated. But it does help me remember, like, okay, I need to plan the entire season, or the entire, you know, both summer and winter, when I'm looking at the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's all one connected round.
Does this board have setup instructions on the board?
Oh, and also the residual is on the far right, because that's at the end of the turn.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, it doesn't have... the board does have a couple basic rules on it, especially like how the... well, not necessarily the full details of how the multiple spaces on the different actions work. It just tells you, like, the player limits per the, you know, one, two, or three spaces on each action.
Yeah.
And then other handfuls of rules.
Also, the point
actually, it goes through the turn. It goes through spring, summer, fall, winter, year end.
Yeah.
That's kind of useful.
Also, the point tracker goes from left to right, like the rest of the board.
Uh-huh. So... yeah, it doesn't go around the edge of the board. It's just one edge.
Yeah.
The benefit of having a very small point threshold.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of that, remember our Lords of Waterdeep episode where I got really mad about the money costs? I think mm-hmm. this game has a pretty good job of, like, reasonable numbers, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, there aren't many wine orders that require low numbers of grapes, because those are the ones that grow on vines. And then, like, vine cards have 1 to 3 on them, which is pretty easy to add up. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, and then you only get, there's a slightly small range of points. Most things cost from 2 to 6 gold. So you're working with pretty small numbers there. Like,
yeah, you never have to have more than 10 gold inventory.
It's a pretty well thought out, like, exercise in restraint in terms of numbers.
Yeah, keeping that range down.
In most actions that give you bonus points that aren't fulfilling wine orders, only give you, like, one bonus point, maybe two. So, like, there's a pretty clear, like, point base value that it's trying to uphold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a cost-to-point ratio. Yeah.
I think one last design point that I want to point out, or that I want to mention, is that it feels like this game, it's, you know, being the complicated worker placement game that it is, it feels like a lot of the game is designed to direct you to the way that you win. So, you know, it doesn't really force you to draw the order cards. But, you know, once you realize that order cards are how you get the most points, then you start to draw them on your own. And then any other action that you take in the game just generally gets you to that point. So, like, either you're getting workers, which will just ramp you up, and it's just a good thing to do in general in this game. But everything else will be giving you some sort of direction to finishing the game or winning the game.
Yeah. It's hard.
Especially, like, you would think, like, oh, what are these, like, visitor cards do? And there's so many of them, and when do I play them, and why do I play them? But pretty much all the visitor cards are just doing what the action spaces do, and all the action spaces are just doing the essential things to winning the game.
Yeah, the action spaces that don't do the things that let you win give you the ability to do those things, like,
yeah,
building a structure or drawing a card.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how the structures... like, if you fully utilize the windmill and the tasting room, how that can help you win the game. Because, like, it seems like we talked about, you get the most points from, like, fulfilling giant orders. And the actions that you take to fulfill those giant orders don't really give you points. It's just those giant orders that end up giving you points. But there's two structures in your vineyard, specifically the tasting room and the windmill that give you points throughout the game, you know, in small increments. I'm just kind of curious if like those can make a difference in winning, right, or if they're just a waste of turns. That's something that I don't know, that I'm just curious about.
In a similar vein, I have to wonder if getting the cottage early would be worthwhile, to get those extra cards to play multiples. But I digress. Either way, I think this is a pretty interesting worker placement game. Mm-hmm. That's like actually kind of streamlined.
Yes, I think it's like there's so many components and just a tiny bit of math involved that makes it, you know, it takes it a little out of the realm of a gateway game. But I think that someone who's new to worker placement games, you know, once they get over like maybe just a little bit of shock about how much there is to this game, there's a lot of wiggle room, and there's a lot of allowances that they're given. So it's not like, you know, crazy punishing for a new player to play this game. I think it's like just borderline a gateway game to worker placement.
Right.
I think if you play any gateway worker placement game like Lords of Waterdeep, like this is where you go next. This game has some things that make it more of a gateway game than Lords of Waterdeep as far as worker placement goes.
Right. So yeah, with that, I don't have much else to say.
Neither do I. If you want to play another farming-esque worker placement game, you can play Agricola. It's way more punishing than this.
It's very depressing.
Yes. And that'll do it for our episode on viticulture. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
We will see you in 2 weeks when we discuss our next game.
See ya.